What is going on, everybody? Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, welcome. It's another edition. It's a beautiful August 3rd here. We're recording live shortly after 7 p.m. Another episode of the Ralph Schadel Show. I am Ralph Schadel. It's great to be back here.
Wrong.
Oh, yeah. Hey, wait. What? No. Who is this?
No, stop it. No, the shtick's over. Oh, okay. Get it. Sorry, guys. It's the Mass Report. Hey, buddies. That's a little thing called a cold open, I think. Drop the music in here, Sam.
You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast.
That was fun. Anyway. That's the best open we've had in a long time.
Yeah. We've got a lot. We don't need, who needs Brian Phillips, universally beloved radio personality and normal host of the Mass Report podcast, when you've got myself, Bart Logan, along with Patrick Murphy, along with Ori Benatar, along with Alex Stanek, and of course, powered by the Ralph Schadel Show and the man behind that, Ralph Schadel. Gentlemen, it's good to have everyone here with us. Good to see everybody. How are we all doing? Aside from, you know, getting over maybe the mourning period that we've all been dealing with for the last better part of a week after the crew's unceremonious departure from MLS's back that we will be talking about.
It's good to be back. I'll say it for it's good to be back. Hope everybody stands safe. Everybody looks great. Pat, I love your beard. It's wonderful. I want to run my fingers through it. That's meant as a sign of masculinity. I'm trying to defend it right now. But in all seriousness, I hope everybody out in crew land is staying safe, wearing your masks, staying healthy, and taking care of yourself.
Absolutely. And we're glad to have Ralph and the rest of the gang here. And we got a lot to talk about, but we have to start at the end. And by the end, I mean the end of MLS's back for, you know, at least any interest that I had in it now that Columbus Crew is eliminated. So let's take ourselves back to a just soaking wet night in Orlando, in the swamp. And I think really the one moment in this tie game that ended, you know, with a crew loss in the penalty shootout that really, I think, summed the night up the most for me was the crew's lone goal, Jossie Zardes, on a penalty that he just completely kicked right into the keeper, you know, read it, and then was fortunate enough to be able to track the ball down, get the rebound, and deposit it in. But that was just the kind of night it was going to be. There was just the level of execution from Columbus Crew. It was not there, and they were just going to have to will everything and will anything into being if they were going to win this one. And ultimately, when it came down to penalties, it just wasn't going to be happening for this team. But, they dominated when you look at shots, when you look on, you know, shots on target, possession, but not a game that really looked like they threatened that much throughout any of the game, save the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was a weird one given what we'd seen from the crew in the first, you know, 2.5 games, I'd say. Obviously, at Atlanta, the second half controlled that game quite a bit, a desperate team there. But, you know, it was strange because you played 11 game or 3 games in 11 days, and then you had a full week off to get ready for this game. You'd obviously had a motivated Minnesota team. We talked last week about Adrian Heath's comments that, well, maybe we shouldn't even, you know, come and play, that the crew have been crowned champions already because there was some hype around the team and whatnot. And, you know, I think the biggest issue was that the crew came out and gave up the opening goal, you know, in a game like that. Even when you're not playing your best, if you can get the lead, that changes things. And especially against a team like Minnesota, who after they scored 18 minutes in off of a really poorly defended corner kick, could just sit back. And they were very disciplined, very good at controlling where the crew could attack, breaking up the attack when the crew did get into dangerous positions, and kind of limiting Guys like Lucas Zelarayan, Darlington Nagbe didn't have his best performance, had a couple giveaways, which for him is a bad day at the office. The Crew's offense really came from Harrison Offal trying to cross for Giassi Zardes. Giassi, as Bart mentioned, wasn't on his game. He did end up getting the goal on the rebound from the penalty kick, but had a couple other chances that I think maybe on another night he puts away and you're talking about a Crew win. So, you know, it was I certainly frustrating for the team, but I think, and we can discuss this a little bit more, I think in the end, you got your 9 points like we talked about last week. You made it into the knockout round. I think you impressed on a national level, being on national TV for your games, and now you got to go home and get some rest before, you know, potentially a regular season picks up later. Sure, you would have loved to make the run in the tournament, potentially win the tournament and everything that came with that, the Champions League spot and whatnot, but if that wasn't going to happen, I think it's better to lose early than it is to keep going in the Orlando Heat, lose maybe in the semifinals or something. Maybe you play multiple penalty kick games where you're pushing hard until the end. You don't want to see any more injuries. We've already seen a number of those. So if you're going to lose and not win the tournament, I think that was probably the way to do it. And you still didn't actually lose the game. You know, it's a penalty kick. So as Caleb Porter pointed out after the game, it's a draw in normal circumstances, which wouldn't have been the worst case scenario given the situation.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to mention. The fact that Caleb Porter seemed to have more, he still had a positive mentality after the loss, and which again was on penalty kick. So if you really are looking at it, 6 games in 2020, the Crew have not lost in 90 minutes once yet, which is a very, very good sign. The only part of Columbus's game that I felt was a little bit flat was the fact that offensively they were just going to the right the entire time. They tried here and there with the, you know, the left side, as well as getting some shots off from outside the box. But for most of that second half, when the Crew controlled possession and were trying to get that equalizer, they were just going down the right side to Harrison Offal, trying to put crosses in, and it was pretty one-dimensional. But I would still say that this was a successful tournament for the Crew. You know, 3 big wins against, you know, conference opposition in Cincy, Atlanta, and New York. Nagbe, Zardes, and Zelarayan, as well as many others, put in some phenomenal performances. Can't knock Jonathan Mensah. I would say Mensah is probably the best performer from the team for all 4 games. I would say was the most consistent. But now we're just going to have to see about a regular season. But I still think it was a successful tournament for the Crew. But at the same time, credit to Minnesota United, especially after seeing them thwomp San Jose in the quarterfinals. They have put together 2 very good tactical performances in the knockout stage, and the way things are going right now, Minnesota might be the winners by the time MLS's back is over next week.
Womp. I like that word. That's a good one. Guys, it's, if we look back at it, I think Pat wrote a piece early before the season started, or excuse me, MLS's back started, that Caleb Porter was going to treat these 3 games very much like regular season games and try to get as many points as he wanted to. And he's got those 9 points. So that's a great start. If you look at the standings right now, it's a great place. The Crew are sitting pretty near the top of the East, I believe, at last check. If not the top of the East, I don't know if somebody would want to correct me on that.
Top of the league, dude.
Top of the league. You know, and I think, you know, as Jimmy pointed out in his piece yesterday, you know, it's tough to do anything after, you know, a third game in 11 days, much less going into one of those penalty kick shootouts. I'm sure a lot of the guys were with heavy legs. It's very difficult to do that. Plus, you know, you got to wonder what the psychological aspects of being in the bubble, being away from families and, you know, doing stuff like that. That's probably a little bit tough. But, all credit to Minnesota, though. They came out as a team on fire. I liked the Adrian Heath. There's no chip on our shoulder, but we're just going to make one anyway, you know, and come out and try to fight for everything that we've got. But it was a good, you know, if you look at it, I think it's probably a fair result because, you know, if you let the ball bounce around in the penalty area like it did on that goal, it's, you know, it deserves to be stuffed in the back of the net. And, you know, it's just Crew looked tired. I think deservedly so. They worked their butts off during the tournament. And, you know, like you said, I agree. I think going home early is not exactly a bad thing because when and if the regular season resumes, I think you're sitting in prime position to resume and try to continue that momentum you established.
Yeah, I think it was a poor performance. You know, I think that you just have to kind of look at it and judge it on its you know, merit. And it was not a great performance from that team. Passing looked disjointed. Finishing wasn't great. They just did not look like they were all on the same page. And I'm not sure, you know, maybe the desire wasn't there. I don't know. You know, I would not blame those guys if they just wanted to go home. But they didn't look like they wanted it. They certainly didn't want it as much as Minnesota did. And it was a poor performance. Good news is, you know, we got the points, like you mentioned, Ralph. I think that's the most important thing. Like I said before the tournament started, I was treating this like a Mickey Mouse Cup. And the only way that I was going to pretend like this was a legitimate, serious, important trophy was if the Crew won it, in which case I would go to my grave claiming that it was one of the most important trophies in Crew history. But overall, you know, we deserved to get knocked out. It was a bad performance. You know, Minnesota were the better team, and best of luck to them in the next round.
I think, you know, I think the points that folks have made here are pretty valid, especially, you know, when it comes to, okay, this is, again, tournament, only those three group stage games counted for the regular season. What concerns me is we saw for the first time what Columbus Crew were like with the deficit this season. And I was not, it did not seem like something that I would expect to see from a Caleb Porter team. It didn't look like, especially throughout that first half, anybody was particularly interested in challenging or going for anything outside of maybe Lucas Zelrayan. You're starting to see it, and we see it a lot from Luis Diaz taking some very ambitious shots, but I was a little, the shot selection there, there somewhere it's just scratching your head. You had a couple of those from Harrison Offal as well, too. The conditions were obviously not in your favor for any sort of attractive soccer. It was a downpour, and you're not going to get the best performance out of them from an execution standpoint. But from a compete level standpoint, I think that's where one of my biggest concerns was for this team. And I think the other moment that really exemplifies it, or at least that point, was the corner in the waning minutes of the game when Pedro Santos goes and you know, is trying to do a little trick play, you know, fake like he didn't touch it. And then, it's just snuffed out immediately by Minnesota, and you have a chance to go ahead here. The game had just been weighted far more in Crew's favor in those final, you know, 15, 20 minutes. And Pedro Santos just absolutely wastes a great chance, best chance Crew are going to have to come and take a lead in that game. And then, you know, we could probably talk a bit about Andrew Tarbell as well, but am I overreacting to this here? Or is this something, especially, you know, if we are thinking about and considering this team for the rest of the season, if a regular season does resume, you know, is that something that if you're Caleb Porter, you're a little bit worried about?
I don't know if it's, I think it's a slight overreaction just because we're still looking at a small sample size of games, as well as the fact that there wasn't much rest in between those four games that the Crew did play in Florida. I want to go back, though, Bart, to the big point that you brought up when you were just talking now, the fact that this is the first time we saw this Crew team play with a deficit, and they did look frazzled. And, you know, something that I was always told as a child from my father is the most important 5 minutes in a soccer game can be after you give up a goal. Those 5 minutes can set the tone for the rest of the game. And Columbus was still pretty disjointed in those 5 minutes after conceding, giving up passes and whatnot. But I think the only, you know, sort of points we can make about the 2020 Crew team that are pretty much, you know, solid, and we have a good enough sample size that we can confirm, is that this team defensively is pretty strong for the most part. Jonathan Mensah is a good leader of men, and whoever's in that back line, he will be able to help, whether it's Keita, Josh Williams, you know, Valenzuela, Jimenez, Chris Cadden, Harrison Afful. I think Crew have the ability to mix up the back line and still come up with clean sheets or only conceding a goal. And the fact that Artur Nagby can be a controlling midfield, and then attacking-wise, you do have a little bit of a mix of options, but we saw in the game against Minnesota, if you can neutralize Lucas Zelrayan in the middle of the field, it seems the Crew pretty much sort of try and push everything to the right against Minnesota. We'll have to see how they would react to that situation when we see them hopefully play regular season games later on in the late summer and early fall. But it seems like if you can neutralize Lucas Zelarayán against Columbus, things could go wrong, because the games where Zelarayán was not neutralized, which was basically against New York City and the three group games in 2020, Columbus came out on top, and he was a major factor in that.
And that's, you know, how many times have you seen something like that with Higuaín too, where as Higuaín goes, so did the Crew go in 2019 and seasons prior to that. But you touched on a good point, Ori, that I liked, which was kind of talking about how you react within the first 5 minutes of conceding a goal. And I think with, you know, teams have to learn, but teams have to learn how to win, but they also have to lose or face adversity together. And this is new with some folks coming in, some new blood, you know, vis-a-vis Cadden, Zelarayán, Diaz now having a full season and stuff like that. You know, it's a little bit interesting. And there is that tendency, coming from my experience, to see players freak out when they go down a goal, because you can be used to being a world beater and having your way and asserting your dominance as the Crew did in the group stage. But once you hit that first little roadblock, you kind of sit back and you go, oh man, here's where the trouble starts. You know, how do I steer out of this swerve, so to speak? And, you know, that's something that I'm not too terribly concerned about, given the body of the work of the team during the tournament. Like I said, it's just going to be a growing process throughout the regular season should one happen. But yeah, it's just what you saw. It's just a little bit of a glare of a thing. I wouldn't be worried. I wouldn't be pressing the panic buttons yet, but these teams kind of need to have a mentality when they're down, and it could be a good coaching moment for Caleb Porter to tell this team, all right, guys, you know, we're down, we're tasting some adversity a little bit here. Here's how we get back together and get back to where we want to be.
Ralph, you said it could be a coaching moment for Caleb Porter, and he brought it up after the game, actually, was that this was the first time they'd faced any sort of real adversity this season. And, you know, he felt like a team needed some disappointment to learn and grow from. And, you know, I think you articulated that pretty well, Ori, as well, that you know, this team had only known success as this group thus far this year. Obviously, the guys that were here last year were part of a disappointing season, but this team had done so well. You know, you would rather have your disappointment happen in a game that ultimately won't matter for you, right? So I think that's something they will certainly take and learn from it. And then going back to something Ori said about teams neutralizing Zelarayán, I think ideally when that happens, other guys step up. And I think the Crew have the guys to do that. You know, I think Pedro Santos proved last year he could be a playmaker for this team. I think we've seen it in bits and pieces from Luis Diaz. You know, he's still young and he's still a bit rash, shoots sometimes when maybe he should make the pass, things like that. Yunus Mokhtar obviously hurt, didn't play in that game, but he showed in this tournament that he's someone who can kind of take over that space if Zelarayán's being neutralized. I think Nagby normally can too. I just think it was weird, you know, a weird situation given the tournament setup and everything. I think in a normal, you know, league situation, if teams try and lock down, you know, if they say, hey, we're going to stop the center of this attack, which, you know, we're going to try and limit Nagby's effectiveness, we're going to try and put up a wall around Zelarayán. Well, now you have options. And if everyone's healthy, I think there's a number of guys you can go to. And we didn't mention Awful. I don't think Milton Valenzuela was really himself in this tournament. So I think there are guys that can respond in normal circumstances when teams try and focus that way. I just think, you know, Pedro was also off. He didn't play in all the games. Guys were tired. You know, I mean, we can come up with a number of excuses, but I do think that they've built enough weapons in this attack where you should be able to create chances. And let's be honest, this team should have scored 2 goals in that game. I mean, if Zelarayán puts the one in late, I think it was, you know, right before the final whistle, you know, we're not talking about this game from the same perspective. We're saying, you know, yeah, they could have been better, but they won the game. Or, you know, if Giassi, as I mentioned earlier, finishes one of those chances, you know, the one that stands out to me especially is the one where he's laying on the ground and the ball just bounces kind of over his foot. You know, if that on a different day, maybe he's able to tuck that one in and you're at 1-1 way early in the game. So I'm not as worried about teams targeting specific things. I think that there are options and you'll see that play out whenever the next time they suit up.
So, and that is the question, but a question for when and if this team does suit up is also who's going to be there between the sticks. We knew that in all likelihood we weren't going to see Aloy Room for the remainder of the tournament. That is now definitive for Columbus. But Andrew Tarbell, his first appearance, I think, by all accounts, everyone, you know, high passing grades. This timeout, maybe not so much. I don't think it's too difficult that the goal off the corner. There are plenty of folks on the Columbus crew back in the box there that can need to take credit for that goal, including him. But I'm thinking also the opportunity where he was nearly chipped from midfield. And then, of course, most notably the penalties when he did not make a single save. Again, difficult circumstances, and the pressure's always on the goalie. But he wasn't even close, wasn't guessing close or anything like that. If Crew does resume, and if Aloy Room is going to miss any more time, do you guys feel as confident maybe as you felt last week with Andrew Tarbell wearing that number one shirt?
I think so. I mean, I think, yes, he was a little rockier against a better Minnesota team. Did have a couple nice saves. I don't think we should discount that. The one, I think it was on Ethan Finley, that also came off a corner where he kind of came off his line and punched it away. But this is, let's remember, this is a backup goalkeeper. I mean, think about the backup goalkeepers the Crew have had, you know, especially recently, you know, what has been the level of trust? I mean, thinking back, you know, I guess Zach Steffen was briefly a backup goalkeeper, but before that, you know, Andy Grunenbaum, was that the last guy that you really trusted to come in and be, you know, a starter if you needed him to? So I think Tarbell's proven previously that he can play in this league. You know, he's not an elite goalkeeper and he's not Aloy Room, but I think he's solid. He's worked with Tim Hanley, the goalkeeper coach, before, and, you know, Tim Hanley rates him pretty high. What I did like, well, I didn't like the PKs that he went right exclusively and didn't make a save, was they showed them talking in the huddle beforehand and he looked very calm. And, you know, I think as a backup goalkeeper, a lot of times if you end up in a penalty kick shootout, you're probably pretty nervous. But he seemed to kind of take it in stride, and maybe too much so. And maybe that's why he didn't go any way but right on those shots. But I think if you're looking at it from, this is your backup goalkeeper, you know, Aloy Room should be back at some point. Yeah, I think it was, you know, roughly 4 to 6 weeks was what they were expecting for Room at the time of the injury. So we can rightly expect him back. I think if this is your backup goalkeeper, based on the two performances you saw, I think you feel pretty confident, even with maybe a couple shaky moments against Minnesota.
Yeah, I mean, Tarbell's not bad. I like Tarbell. I think when he played against the Crew in 2018, he actually got off to a pretty decent start. But, you know, as the resident goalkeeper on staff, penalty kicks are never easy. It's a very nerve-wracking situation. You can always I sweat a lot usually just when I read, but, you know, the added stress of penalty kicks is very difficult. I remember this particular instance in the 2011 Women's World Cup. Hope Solo had a penalty kick shootout against Brazil, I think it was. And she dove exclusively to the right, I believe, 4 times out of 5. And they asked her during the press conference, they said, why'd you do that? You know, because you had so many different kickers come through and try their attempts. Well, she had it down to the exact science of the percentage of times that I think she said somewhere in the neighborhood of it was 57% of the time that the opponents that she was studying up go to the right. Now, I don't know if that's something generally, you know, from a coaching standpoint that I've seen, is usually if you get into a penalty kick type game, the goalkeeper usually keeps the shots of the opponents or who they assume will be the kick takers on their water bottle. It's one of the trademarks that you see there. But I don't know if Tarbell just went in completely blind and said, I'm just going to go to the right and hope for one to hopefully catch a glove or catch a leg or something like that. I would love to know his logic behind that, but normally that's just something that you review in film and that you know something. So maybe, and you know, on the other side of that, Minnesota might say, hey, we go to the right a lot. Why don't we try going to the left? And that can kind of help kind of confuse the goalkeeper a little bit. Usually what you look for generally is when somebody is placing a goal kick from the spot, number one tell you look for are the eyes, which is something that you saw with Chris Cadden when he kicked his penalty kick, and I'm sure we'll get to that in a second. You look for the hips. What way are the hips opening up? Do they give you any indication of where they're going to put the ball in the net? And then there's a couple other little tells that you could take a look at. But, yeah, I would love to know his reasoning for that, if that is something, you know, and I'm sure we'll never know, but that's something that generally goalkeepers try to brush up on, particularly if they know penalties are a part of the game situation or could be part of the game situation.
I'm a little bit upset at Murph's comments about Andy Greenebaum being the last goalkeeper that we, you know, could put our faith in. That's Dan Withrow erasure, Murph. And, you know, I'm not going to stand for it on this podcast. No, but in all seriousness, you know, we're talking about a backup goalkeeper. He did okay. He didn't, you know, he's not Buffon or somebody, you know, it's totally fine. When Room went down, that was going to be rough. And the rest of the tournament was going to be rough. And, you know, I think you get what you pay for with pretty much everybody in this league. And you know, I think we got what we paid for with Tarbo. You know, you have to make the decision as to whether or not you want to put your money and your resources in a backup keeper that is maybe going to get three or four games a season. And, you know, it sucks that that happened during a knockout tournament, you know, this COVID cup thing. But I'm not upset at him. I'm more honestly upset at the field players who are the starters who did not get, you know, anything to get us out of the deficit that we were in. You know, if you can only get one goal in a 1-1 game and you're leaving it up to your backup keeper, then that's on you. And so, you know, I don't put that on Tarbell. That loss is on guys like Lucas. It's on guys like Jossi. You know, it's on guys like, you know, the whole team. It's on the whole team. So I would blame Tarbell actually maybe least, because he's not supposed to be in there.
I think that's fair. And yeah, we're not putting this one on Tarbell's shoulders. All in all, we'll talk a little bit more about the, you know, the other happenings within this tournament. But when you consider, again, the group stage, taking all 9 points out of that, but then you consider Vito Wormhoor out for a long period, a lot of room, Yunus Mukhtar, all of whom are going to be missing not insignificant amount of time. Maybe I'm not sure. I haven't really seen an update on Yunus since last week. But I don't know if it's not, you know, a win for the tournament. I don't know if it's a loss, but where do you put this? It seems like it's a little bit bittersweet.
I mean, I think when a lot of crew Twitter was bragging earlier on in this tournament about how deep this team was. And, you know, I think we're going to have to see in the next couple weeks, months here, because of some of these injuries, really how deep is this team. And, you know, we'll see when they all get back. I know we're going to talk about some of these plans later on in the podcast, but, you know, I think some of these, you know, maybe longer term injuries. So we'll have to kind of wait and see. For me, this tournament's a win. We curb stomped Cincinnati. We got 9 points. Nobody got COVID except for someone who probably had it before. And so, you know, everybody comes home healthy other than these injuries. But nobody got the coronavirus when they were down there. And we got the points that we needed. So for me, it's a win.
Yeah, I would agree with that. The tournament was a dub for the crew. And just, well, I think they do have more depth than they did last year. I'm pretty confident in the defensive depth. I think Andrew Tarbell can put in, you know, some very good performances in goal. It's all going to depend on who we end up playing in the regular season and how it's all going to work out. Offensively, we'll have to see, because you have to see guys like, you know, Diaz and Etienne, you know, maybe have to step up and be goal scorers now and try and take on more of a lead role in attack without Mukhtar as one of your primary wingers, or if they want to rest Lucas in the center of the park, putting Pedro in that position. We've seen him play in that position before, and Pedro was not good on the left side against Minnesota. He played much better on the right, and centrally, he also played really well when he did in the group stage. So a dub for the crew in the tournament. I'm pretty confident about their depth going into the regular season, but like we all said, we need to see this team tested just a little bit more with more games to really get an idea of whether that depth is for real and whether this team is really, really, really for real.
Looking at the bracket right now is a little bit chaotic, that knockout round. Of course, Columbus Crew getting bounced out, but also LAFC that had been so high scoring. Diego Rossi, what, 7 goals or something in this tournament, but knocked out on penalties as well by Orlando, the host. Minnesota, of course, after beating Crew, just puts a spanking on San Jose to advance to the semifinals. And then on the other bracket, Portland, after beating Cincinnati, you hate to see it, guys, on penalties as well. They go on to beat NYCFC to claim one of the spots in the semifinals, and then Philadelphia cruises to a semifinal spot with wins over New England and Sporting KC. So Philly, Portland, Orlando, Minnesota. What do you guys got? What are your picks there for the remainder of this tournament? Who's going to walk away with the crown or the Mickey Mouse ears, the Mickey Mouse ears that you wear on your head?
Can I start by talking about the Portland Cincinnati game?
Go ahead.
Because I think, you know, when we were talking about was this a win for the Crew or not earlier on in the podcast, I think it would have felt a lot more like a loss if immediately following that game you just got to watch that Portland Cincy game, you know, and you could, that was a total palate cleanser for me. I mean, you got that terrible game, and then you have 90 minutes of terrible soccer, capped off with a Steve Clark disaster class, absolutely horrible performance from Steve Clark in a Portland shirt, right? I mean, so that's just, for a Crew fan, Steve Clark blowing it in a knockout game in a Portland shirt was just, it felt so good. And then Cincy blow it on penalties, and they got the goal called back, and they did that stupid rowboat car, so whatever it was a car, right? They were all like in a car or something like that.
Yeah. I think it was supposed to be a bus, like parking the bus.
Oh. Parking the bus.
They can't even do a celebration right.
Yeah, and so you know, that goal came back, and so that was really, you know, you hated to see that. And then they were heading back to the hotel or to the airport or somewhere, the Cincy team were, after that. And their bus broke down on the side of the road at like 2 a.m. And so that whole evening, really, for me, when you put it all together, that's a win. That's an absolute win. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we can just keep seeing Cincy underperform. If we start this back up, you know, the one bright side about that will be it's more chances for Cincy to just provide entertainment to fans other than their own city. So it was good.
Yeah, and Cincinnati in that penalty shootout surely didn't help themselves either. Jurgen Locadia and Kendall Waston taking two pretty pathetic penalties. Kendall Waston's one in particular, one of the worst penalties I've maybe ever seen, but it's interesting seeing the final four in this tournament. You kind of have a little nice mixture. You know, you've got the two Group A teams in Orlando and Philadelphia. Orlando coming in as the theoretical host because this is happening pretty much in Orlando. And they've come out and put together some good performances, holding Montreal and then getting a late equalizer against LAFC. Kenneth Vermeer was in terrible position on that corner kick to allow Orlando to get back in the game, force a shootout, then win said shootout. And Orlando is trying to prove to everybody, you know, we had a bad season last year, but we're out here trying to do something in this tournament. And then I think with Philly and Minnesota, kind of, they're sort of in a similar boat in regards to, they, you know, got to the playoffs last year, had decent seasons, but they want to prove that they can be contenders. Philadelphia, I feel like, in terms of 5 games, if you're looking at all 5 games they've played, have probably put together the most consistent tournament thus far. You know, they come out beating New England in the round of 16 in a pretty dominant performance, smatter Sporting Kansas City. Kansas City didn't have a chance in that game. Philadelphia scoring 3 goals in the first half. And then Minnesota, I think, have improved. You know, I mentioned their knockout stage performances. I think they've had 2 great knockout stage performances. But I mean, the best squad probably at this tournament is Portland, most likely. But let's face it, Portland did dominate FC Cincinnati, but they weren't able to put them away. I mean, the Crew were the only team that were able to put FC Cincinnati away early and score two goals against them, which is just shocking to me that that happened, that Cincy only conceded multiple goals in one of their four games at this tournament. And then Portland basically shut up any sort of potential rally from New York City. So I'm pinning myself in the final of Minnesota against Philly, honestly, though. I think Portland might have the best squad, but I like the way Philly is playing from a consistency basis. I like the way Minnesota is tactically. I think they'll be able to stop Orlando City. And a Minnesota-Philly final, I would have to say that Adrian Heath and the Loons are going to end up as champions. I'm feeling Minnesota.
Yeah, and I think a Minnesota-Philly final was just what Don Garber was looking for when he decided to go with this tournament. So personally for me, I'm really happy with that. Another outcome that I would be happy with is if Orlando wins the whole thing, because their fans would count it as a very significant trophy win, and the rest of Major League Soccer Twitter would bully them for the next 5 years on that basis. So either one of those is an acceptable outcome for me. The only not acceptable outcome is Portland winning everything, which means that's probably what's going to happen because it's 2020 and everything is bad. But I'm looking forward to the remaining games, and you know, we'll see where things go. But yeah, I'm just happy that that Cincinnati got knocked out, and then they had their bus breakdown. That was really a good way to end the tournament from an Ohio perspective, in my eyes.
And one more thing to point out about MLS's back that we can't, you know, not mention is the fact that after the team's arrivals and we saw COVID cases and Nashville and Dallas drop out, the start was shaky, but throughout the last three and a half to 4 weeks, they really turned it around and have done a great job with the bubble. No positive tests in the MLS bubble, essentially since, you know, after the first group stage game. So MLS being one of the first bubbles of American sports, you know, following the NWSL, MLS followed in their footsteps and did a really phenomenal job in regards to the rules of the bubble and keeping everybody safe. And now it's a question of whether they can keep those safety protocols and figure something out if we're playing in home markets in the regular season.
And I think that's a good point, Ori. There's reporting today, we're wondering what's going to happen for two MLS, two back, or whatever a season that gets resumed would be called. But at least from some reporting from the Washington Post, Steve Goff, and as far as I can tell, he seems to just be re-reporting information that was released last year, reported out by some folks over at The Athletic, but that MLS is moving forward with plans to resume the season, or at least something resembling the season. They're looking at, again, as you alluded to, Ori, playing in those home markets. So not unlike what Major League Baseball is doing, or what USL is doing. The first full weekend is looking like it could be late. It would be later this month, the weekend of August 21st through 23rd. Although you've got the league and the Players Association still trying to work out some of the details, I think in some scenarios you would have Nashville and Dallas playing games that count for money or count for the chips, whatever you want to count points. In the standings earlier, you'll recall that both of those teams were booted from MLS to back, or MLS is back. They had multiple positive COVID tests. So those are still 9 points that they missed out on, or the chance to at least earn. So they've got to find some way to reconcile that. But how realistic is it, are we to expect? And then I'm not sure quite how many games they're planning to play, if it's going to be the remaining, 30 or 29. I don't think that would be the case, but they would have the season, at least if all goes well, it would culminate 18, once again.
Roughly.
18, okay. Culminating in December, which is when we're used to the MLS Cup being hoisted. Guys, what are your thoughts? How realistic do you think this is, and what are some of the issues maybe standing in the way of them pulling this off as well as they've been able to relatively pull off the MLS's back tournament?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that I like your idea of playing for money, since all of these teams have a bunch of season ticket money that none of us are going to get to use. They should just put all that season ticket money and wager it on different MLS matches. And if your team wins, then you get the other team's season ticket money, and then that money goes to the fans. And so we can gamble remotely through our players on MLS games. I think that would be really good and a good segue for Major League Soccer into gambling, which is coming to a state near you. So I think that could be a good one. But no, in all seriousness, while still kind of joking, I think the main challenge is the fact that coronavirus is everywhere in the United States, and it's decimating other leagues that are trying to do similar things. And you're seeing team-wide outbreaks in other leagues like Major League Baseball when they are trying kind of a similar approach to things. And I just think it's very Major League Soccer to find something that totally works, but then see NFL and Major League Baseball doing something completely different and throwing out the thing that's working for what the big boys are doing, even though the thing that the big boys are doing is clearly not working. So very on par for Don Garber and his, you know, administration or whatever you want to call it. But really, really disappointing. I get that players don't want to do another bubble, but I think your choices are another bubble, or everybody gets sick and the season gets canceled, or no season at all. So make your pick. And I think they should go with the bubble.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that players don't want to do another bubble. It's that they're not going to do another bubble. They just, you know, I mean, they've spent the last month plus down in Orlando. And even if you did it regionally, you're still asking them to be away from family and whatnot. And it's just not something they're going to agree to do. But on the flip side of that is, and what I think makes this a little different than some of the other sports is these guys aren't, you know, regardless of who the player is, and there are some exceptions, I guess, but these guys need jobs. You know, it's not like NFL guys that can opt out or baseball guys that are making an obscene amount of money. You know, they need to play soccer in order to get paid. And that was part of the reason they agreed to do the MLS's back tournament to begin with, was because, you know, they didn't want to go throughout a whole season without having an income, having health insurance, all these things that they need to be playing games in order for that to happen. So I think there's that to consider. I think you also, because of that, can take into account that maybe these players handle things better than what we've seen in Major League Baseball. I think pretty much every outbreak, they've been able to relate back to teams doing things that they probably shouldn't have, whether it was going out to a bar, a couple guys, or I believe the Cardinals players today, it came out that a couple guys went to a casino, things like that, that, you know, now the league is starting to clamp down where, you know, originally they said they strongly, Major League Baseball said they strongly recommend guys stay in their hotels when they're on the road. Well, now they're saying you're not allowed to go out. And obviously, you know, you can't control what humans do, but they're trying their best. I think with Major League Soccer, the plan will be as much as possible to charter in and out of cities the day of game, so you're not staying there and you're not worried about a hotel. Now, there will be some longer trips, especially in the Western Conference, where you know, that's just not feasible. You're going to need to stay a night. And then obviously you have to worry about guys in their home markets and what they're doing. I can only speak for the Crew guys, but I think that, you know, this is a determined bunch that wants to play a season. And I think they realize in order to do that, you've got to make some sacrifices. And if you want to be at home with your family and not be in a bubble, well, that means, you know, don't be out at the bars. Maybe don't go out to dinner like you might do normally. Things like that. Things that everyone has had to sacrifice throughout this whole thing. So I think while the bubble is obviously the easiest way to do it from a on-field perspective and not having the spread of the virus, I think that to ask a team to do that again is unreasonable. You know, it's not the playoffs like it is in the NHL or the NBA where you would be traveling anyway and it's the end of the season. This would be, you know, almost 3 months of being away again if they go till December. And I think that it's tough to ask guys to do that, especially since they've already done it once. And so now you hope that they can handle it like adults and, you know, take the sacrifices that come with playing this game. And, you know, you do the best you can. I do think there'll probably be some positive tests. I think you're going to see that in most sports that do this. And I think you have to be flexible. I've said the same thing with college football when I've talked to people about that. They're, you know, they may have games that get canceled because of positive tests. Obviously, when they were in the bubble, they were getting test results back right away. There's an issue in home markets about how long that'll take to get back. So it's definitely not a sure thing. But I think that, like I said, these guys need to be playing. And, you know, in order to do that, I think you just have to be smart about it and be willing to work within the rules that they set forth with the travel and not being as socially active as you might be normally.
What I do want to point out, though, is they can't do the bubble. The players need to be around their families. And I absolutely believe that they should be. But, you know, we're talking about three teams, Vancouver, Montreal, and Toronto, that aren't going to be allowed across the border, that aren't going to be allowed to. So you're going to have at least some MLS players still having to deal with that reality, regardless, if just by virtue of choosing to go this route. So I agree, you know, and I think it's, I'll just say that I think it is there's a problem when and it's beyond just MLS, when we have to pay people to put themselves at risk and instead or say, you know, well, look, we're paying them and otherwise we've got to take things like healthcare and stuff away rather than just paying them to sit at home and not get sick. There are a lot of guys that can get introduced. All these MLS players can be doing the right thing and some random interaction, something like that, that can do it. It's not a result of, sure, MLB players going out to parties and stuff. That's not great, but testing positive for COVID isn't a sign of moral failure or degeneracy on your part. It just happens. And it is, I think, going to be something that becomes somewhat ubiquitous, Pat, or, you know, part of the reality. But I think we need to, I think, challenge MLS and the league on some of those premises too.
Yeah, I completely agree. I didn't mean to make it sound like that's the only way these guys are getting it, because it's certainly not. And I think you've seen in other leagues and just in life, I know a couple people now that have gotten it that have been very careful, and it just, you're right, it happens. And you mentioned the Canadian teams, and they do have a bit of a plan for that, and we'll see how well that works. According to The Athletic, the plan is for those three to just play each other from August 22nd to September 13th. So that's what, three weekends. And then in typical MLS fashion, hope that things get better between the US and Canada by then, where the border is open. There, again, according to The Athletic, there was no plan B if they are not allowed into the country, though they did report that Toronto was already making plans to potentially operate in the United States. And I think that's what.
Well, they don't have a field right now. It's being used in the NHL bubble as the area for players to go out and get some, you know, spend some time on some green space.
Yeah. So that, you know, it's certainly interesting. New York City currently doesn't have a home either, because with the condensed baseball schedule, the Yankees are, you know, they're not able to work as easily as they would with the schedule normally. So that's a whole issue. They asked their head coach on one of the broadcasts, I think it was Taylor Twellman, asked if he knew what they were going to do. And, you know, the coach just kind of laughed and said they weren't sure. And I think Twellman joked that they should play their games in Central Park and then quickly realized that that would create a mass gathering that would defeat the whole purpose of everything we've just talked about. But, there's certainly issues involved here, no doubt. And, you know, we'll see when the league announces this full plan, if there's more details that maybe just haven't come out yet or are still being worked on. There certainly aren't all the answers there. I do think that, you know, hopefully, like the MLS's back tournament, they're able to figure it out and get these games in. You know, I think we obviously had a podcast a few weeks ago where we were all fairly skeptical about what was going to happen at the MLS's back tournament. And as Ori pointed out earlier, that worked out okay. Now, this is a whole different ballgame, no doubt about that. But, you know, I think you've got to try, you've got to try something. You know, the issue with paying that players to stay home is I don't know if the league has that kind of money. You know, and maybe some owners do, but the league as a whole, I'm not sure you can go a whole rest of the season with no revenue and still be able to pay players everything. I wish they could. I think that would be the best situation probably, but yeah, I don't know. I don't have all the answers, and clearly MLS doesn't either.
If you can build a $250 million stadium, which most teams can do, you can, I mean, these guys are not earning like NFL money, right? I mean, we have two DPs who are earning like what, $1.5 million a year, something like that. What's the total operating cost for all the total, you know, budget for the Crew is what, $5 million, maybe less. I mean, that's the interest that they're going to pay for 1 year on that stadium. I just don't buy that these guys can't afford it. They don't want to pay it. And I get that.
Yeah. You maybe know, that's just a better way to phrase it.
Yeah. Restaurants are losing money like crazy. Bars are losing money like crazy. If sports teams have to lose money like crazy, I think that's a reasonable thing to expect. They make money like crazy most other years. I mean, Anthony Precourt made what, $50 million in like three seasons by being an idiot. I mean, this is not like a high risk business venture. This is something where for the most part, you just make money by doing nothing just through the appreciation of your asset. So, you know, I think most of the owners will be fine. If any of these owners want to sell, there's a billion other people who will buy their team from them. It's totally fine. You know, my concern really is, I don't see how this is going to work. I don't see how this is going to work now, especially now as we start moving into the fall when you have COVID cases that are plateauing or potentially increasing while you also have cases of flu increasing. What happened in the 1918 epidemic was really bad in the fall. I don't have a lot of confidence in the government to kind of have a better plan for this thing then than they do now. I would love to be wrong on that. And without getting too much into politics, I just don't know that we're going to see this thing miraculously be resolved. But, you know, I think players should have the opportunity to opt out at the very least. I know Brad Stuver opted out of the COVID tournament with NYCFC. You know, I think that these guys should be able to get their paycheck and not participate if that's what they choose. And I also don't know, you know, even when you don't talk about the Canadian teams, do we have any idea how teams are supposed to do this within the United States? Like if you come from Florida to Ohio right now, you're supposed to quarantine for 14 days. That's governor's orders. That's what you're supposed to do. Are these guys going to like camp out here for 2 weeks and then play one game and then go? No, they're just going to go and play the game. So are they going to be violating state rules and state, you know, health orders and things like that in order to have this tournament? I don't know. This thing does not seem fully thought out. The one thing I will say is I was very skeptical about the bubble. I thought it was going to be a disaster. I was very outspoken both on this podcast and on Twitter about my thoughts on that. And I was dead wrong. So maybe they'll sort it out and come up with a good plan and everything will sound good. But right now it seems like every league is trying to figure out how they can make this work, not just Major League Soccer, but every American sports league. And I don't think any of them have a solution because I'm not sure there's a silver bullet. I'm not sure that there is a way to make this work. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way to make playing outside of a bubble perfect. It's impossible. You're bound to have at least one person run into somebody at a grocery store or wherever and potentially get the virus. It's just the fact that, you know, what we've seen with Major League Baseball, not just the irresponsibility of the Marlins and the Cardinals players from, you know, going out and doing what they did. You also have to mention Major League Baseball, you know, seeing John Heyman's report about how Cardinals players did go to a casino and basically mentioning how the MLB tightened its rule from leaving the hotel room. Their initial rule was that leaving the hotel room was very strongly discouraged and not forbidden. Which, if you're a traveling team, to me, that's ludicrous. I don't know how the hell that was the rule in the first place. If you're a traveling team, you need to stay in your hotel room and that's it. You shouldn't even be allowed to leave the hotel room. But, you know, and the thing that's interesting, you know, as we talk about the possibility of an MLS outside bubble, you know, we mentioned the fact that they need jobs and whether or not they have to go into another bubble to make things work, who knows? I don't think they would go for it either. Like Pat said, you can't tear them apart from their families for 2 to 3 months again. It's just so hard. And then on the other side of things, how are you going to monitor these guys and how they're going to live their lives when they're at home, leaving their houses potentially to buy food or, you know, whatever. I'm sure they're going to be safe and wear masks and all that, but you never know. One person could slip up or, you know, chance into somebody there. But sports is under the same sort of, you know, thought process as everything else that's about to start in the fall. We've seen all these reports about universities and schools and how they're going to return. There's so many different ideas floating around from so many different places. I mean, in Ohio, for example, public schools are not going to meet in person until at the very earliest Halloween. You've got Ohio that just made a law regarding no fans at sporting events until the state of emergency is done. So Ohio State football, they're not going to get any fans essentially. And we'll have to see how the college football and NFL season is going to go. And then you're seeing universities coming up with different plans. You know, Ohio State doing sort of a half and half. I just saw today that the University of Illinois is going to have students and faculty tested twice a week on campus. And then before Thanksgiving, they're all going to go home and finals are going to be online. So there's all these different businesses. And I mean, every single person in the world is affected by this virus. And when you're talking about starting up a sports league, a school, a university, anything, you have to think of every single little thing. And if you're going to play outside of a bubble for Major League Soccer, you really need to take it seriously and think about every single little thing. Major League Baseball did not do that. And MLB players understood that and started opting out. You know, and Cespedes just said, to hell with this. I'm going home. I'm done with this. I'm seeing guys get the virus. I'm just heading back home. I'm not dealing with this anymore. And we're seeing NFL players, even before we know what the COVID situation is going to be like in September. We can't predict the future. I think it's safe to say it's not going to get miraculously automatically better, but we don't know if it's going to be better or worse necessarily. But NFL players are opting out. And Adam Schefter reported this week that players have until this Thursday to decide whether or not they're opting out for a season. So I think we'll see the same thing with MLS when the regular season plan comes out. Some players are going to opt out for the safety of their family, for the health of themselves, their family, whoever. And some players are going to say, we got to play. I need to make a living. I want to play and I need to make money, because we're basically at a situation now as a country and the whole world where we got to live at our own risk, because guess what? Nobody is going to go for the lockdown mentality again, like we did in March, April, and May. They don't want to lose their jobs again and get unemployment checks kind of thing. So we'll have to see if the MLS players feel the same way about going into another bubble. I don't think the league is going to suggest it, though.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the kind of the total payroll for different teams in Major League Soccer in 2020, and the Crew are coming in at $11.25 million. I mean, that's not cheap. That is a financial hit for sure. But that's not something that's going to bankrupt the Haslam family, right? I mean, that's, you know, that's one Cleveland Browns player who gets a bad injury and is out for the season.
A-Rod was getting twice that in like 2002.
Yeah. Like, so,
yeah. For swinging a piece of wood five times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is not going to bankrupt any of these teams. I'm just kind of glancing through this. LA Galaxy is at $20.5 million. I mean, they've got a crazy TV, you know, deal and things like that. So, I don't think that this would not be the end of the league if they just decided to call it, right? This is something that it's a financial hit that they don't want to eat. And I get that. But, you know, if this goes south and it sounds like, you know, they might not have all of the things planned out for this, I hope they'll pull the plug early before a bunch of people get sick and before it becomes kind of a little bit of an embarrassment, because the bubble went well. And, you know, yeah, MLS came out of that with a better reputation than when they went in, assuming nothing crazy happens in the last little bit here. But it seems like it's going to be okay. I just don't want them to lose it all trying to chase, you know, a regular season that maybe shouldn't happen.
Yeah, and they have to do conference-only scheduling. I think that's basically guaranteed. And even with conference-only scheduling, because you have bigger conferences in MLS, I would even limit the schedule to a certain radius of travel. Because you look at, you know, a flight for Columbus to Miami to play Inter Miami, or they go to Orlando to play Orlando City if they're playing an away game, you know. And then you look at the Western Conference. Houston to Los Angeles is not exactly a very short flight. Texas and California are both in a pretty bad situation as well. And all these different every state is basically has its own phase in regards to coronavirus. It's not like in Germany or Italy and England where the whole country is kind of falling under the same rules and are in the same situation. And we're now seeing in Italy, people are going to concerts. They might have fans for sporting events in Serie A when it restarts, or at the very least have like 15%, 20% capacity for only home fans. Every single state is in a completely different situation because this country is so big and there's so many people. So I hope it works, but I'm very cautiously optimistic that it will work perfectly. Well, it's never going to work perfectly. Or whether or not it will work successfully and we have a Major League Soccer season with no major hiccups. And we're almost 2 weeks into the MLB season and we've seen some major hiccups, but the season is still going on. But if we start to see a third, fourth, fifth team in MLB get infected, it's over for them most likely. And if we see that happen in MLS, it's over for them as well. And then it's all down to the NFL and college football as the last two leagues to kind of figure out whether or not it's really possible until we get a vaccine.
So I've got two questions. One is, for the sake of argument, we are going to say the league does resume. They are playing in home markets. And they even find out, and Ohio says you can have fans at some level attend games. You know, maybe it's that 20% threshold that Ohio State was throwing around, but Ohio says they can have them. Are any of you as fans going to an MLS soccer game in the year of our Lord 2020?
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
No chance.
No chance. I've left my house once in 5 months. I'm not taking any chances, even with my mask, even with a face shield. I'm not taking that chance, especially in a big area with plenty of germs.
So yeah. No. I just recently renewed my season ticket. This will be my 10th season coming up here. I love the Crew. I've been a Crew fan my entire life. I will not see the Crew play in this season. You can give me front row seats and tell me I'm one of 50 people in the whole stadium. I'm still not going. It's not worth it for me. I can watch the team on the television. It's going to be just fine. This is a weird year. I'm writing this year off. I hope the rest of the, you know, Ohio does too. But the thing that concerns me about these plans is I think that the Venn diagram between people who would love to go to a Crew game right now and who would show up and the number of people who maybe won't take all of the necessary precautions to avoid coronavirus is a circle. I see the photos from Disney World and I kind of think the same things. Like if you're willing to get on a plane and fly to Florida to go to Disney World in the middle of a global pandemic that's killing hundreds of thousands of people, you're probably not somebody that I want to be sitting on Space Mountain with in the middle of a pandemic that's killing hundreds of thousands of people. So no, I would skip out for Major League Soccer this season. I love watching the team on television. It's perfectly fine with me. But yeah, they're not going to convince me to come back. Not until there's a vaccine for this thing.
Yeah. I mean, as somebody who checks a lot of the boxes for the, not ideal categories for COVID-19. There's just too much uncertainty that revolves around this virus. And, you know, for those that don't know out in radio land, I'm a big guy, but I've got asthma too. And that's just, it's not a winning combination. Like you guys said too, with the kind of the Venn diagram of people that might take precautions versus people that attend the games. It's just, it's not worth the risk for me, especially if it's on TV. And I've got, you know, family that I'm around too that I try to help out too because my parents can't get out and do things all that much. So it's just not a big risk. And I think, you know, it's something that I can table for a few months like we've had so far, if not longer, just for the sake of making sure that everybody's safe at home.
Well, and one other thing, you know, as someone who sits in Nordeca, you know, the thing that makes Nordeca famous is that we sing. You know, we're shouting all game. There is no difference between shouting and coughing from a spread standpoint. If I've got COVID and I'm singing Glory to Columbus, you know, at the top of my lungs, I am projecting those, you know, aerosol droplets of COVID out into the rest of Nordeca, right? And depending on the wind, that could blow back at the next, you know, five rows behind me. It's just not worth it. You know, this is, it's Major League Soccer. We love our league, but it's Major League Soccer. We can watch it on television for one season. It's going to be perfectly fine. Everybody's going to get over it. 3 or 4 years from now, we're going to be like, yeah, that really sucked, huh? But we're not going to be like, oh man, I wish I would have gone to that one Crew game in the middle of the pandemic that killed 250,000 people. Like, I don't think that's a conversation that I'm ever going to have. We should just wait it out. They shouldn't open up these stadiums. They should keep it closed. I don't even think they should have these games in the home markets, but if they do, they should keep the stadiums closed. And, you know, we'll circle back next season. We'll have a brand new stadium to experience, and it's going to be great.
My other question is, what happens if the season does not resume? What does Don Garber do to deny Chris Crew the supporter shield and or the de facto MLS Cup champions on account of they are currently in first place in the standings and our rightful, you know, our rightful treble and as well as two CONCACAF slots? I mean,
that's
what
right.
Does he do?
Well, that's a really excellent question and a good point that you brought up that we also would get MLS Cup because we're first place in the table. Mm-hmm. And so we would be most likely to win in knockout games than any other team because we've won more games than any other team. So excellent point there. I think the way that he would screw us personally is the way that he has screwed other teams in the past. I know I've mentioned this before, but he likes the drawing of straws, but no one gets to see the straws being drawn. So that they don't even draw straws. He just says whatever he wants. And so I think that they would say, you know, you get one straw per point, and then I will draw whoever is the winner. And I think that that would be either LAFC or it would be Atlanta United. And I think it would probably be LAFC because they need to get them trophies and they're not going to get them any other way. Right. So.
Two words, the season ends if there's no season. And I remember Pat mentioning this all the way back in March when this whole thing started. Marble races. Remember Pat mentioning that he was watching marble races with no sports on. So you just give the Crew the most marbles because they're first in the table. You give Cincinnati the least marbles because they're the worst team ever. And then that's it. You just race some marbles, and that's how you decide who wins MLS Cup.
So I actually have a somewhat serious idea. This is it's serious by my standards, so you guys know. But what if you
– Falcao picks it?
Yes. Well, I would like that. I would like that very much, of course. But what if you could just, like, make everybody play their actual player on FIFA? Like, you would do pro clubs. It'd be 11v11. Everybody would have to play their actual position.
It would be socially distanced.
And then it would be an online tournament. You bring the EMLS Cup stuff in, right? Maybe you could have something where, like, the last 10 minutes of the game, you get to sub in your EMLS player. So we could bring, like, that, like, skis guy or whatever the heck.
Isn't our guy really bad, though? Like, do we really want to do that?
I don't know if he's good or bad. I don't care.
He lost to some people that I know in foosball before the FC Cincy game. So
yeah, you could have him
never watched him on Twitch.
Yeah, you can have him play as any, maybe. But if you have – I mean, I would say don't have the goalkeepers play because I've played plenty of pro clubs in my day on FIFA 20. Playing goalkeeper is impossible. So if Eloy Room picked up a controller and tried to play goalkeeper on pro clubs, it would be kind of a disaster.
But FIFA's all about positioning for the goalkeeper. So I think Room might actually be halfway decent at that. Plus,
you have
would
to press
have
buttons.
The EMLS guy on salary. So you could have, you know, skis or whatever – teach the guys like how to be better, you know, instead of doing training for the games, you could just do training for FIFA. Mm-hmm. You could stream the whole thing on Twitch. You would make more money than you make on ESPN because kids would actually watch it.
Yeah.
This wouldn't be a disaster. I mean, you know,
it would be entertaining to say the least, but I would assume that guys like Sebastian Berhalter and Aiden Morris would be the more experienced FIFA players since they're the young bunches.
Well, and that would be fun because you're starting 11 in, you know, an actual game is not necessarily your starting 11 in FIFA. So maybe you call up like a guy from the Crew Juniors. Maybe you have some like 13-year-old kid who's going to like high school or, you know, whatever. And you're
going with
like,
his 95 striker on pro clubs and just like, bossing everybody.
Yeah. The Sporting like Columbus 8-year old that has, yeah, like you said, a 95 overall.
You're the DP now. Enjoy. I think that could be fun. You know, it's not the season, but, you know, we could do something like that. MLS would just need to get creative about it. Don Garber, call me. We can get this sorted out.
Alex, that is not the worst idea you've ever had.
Have your people call my people, Don. We'll get this sorted out.
We could even set that up through SB Nation with just the other websites and do it ourselves, maybe.
Ooh, yeah, we could.
But to go back to Bart's original question, in all seriousness, I think if they stop the season, it would just be null and void. I think there would be the MLS's back champion, and then Don Garber would just say, you know, not enough games were played. We won't crown a Supporters Shield winner. We won't crown an MLS Cup winner, and we'll just go on to 2021. And that would be how the situation resolves itself.
And that checks the boxes of, you know, screwing over Columbus Crew. So I'm probably going to have to go with you on that one too, Murph. Gentlemen, you know, hopefully we'll have another opportunity to touch base here later this season when the MLSs or the two MLS two back or MLS two season 2022 redemption or whatever it's going to be called returns. I hope we'll be able to talk about it. Does anybody else have just a flaming hot take that they need to get out, fire out into the void before we wrap this one up?
Just one thing really quick. Construction stopped today on FC Cincinnati Stadium because someone said a racial slur at the construction site. My sources still have not reported to me whether it was a construction worker or if it was Ron Jans, but I will try to update you all on Twitter as soon as I find out for sure.
I think we should give Alex a lot of credit for admitting that he was wrong about the MLS's back tournament, because for a couple weeks now I've been like, I should bring this up and just make Alex face the music on this one. But he's been in such a good mood that I felt like that was unnecessary. And then he did it himself. So props to you, Alex, for taking your lumps there. And
yeah, I, you know, after being so right about Radamel Falcao, it's only right and fair that I admit that when I'm wrong on something like MLS Cup. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Gotta be. Yeah. Hot take for me. Stay safe and hello to Pat's pup over there.
Yeah. What a great guest star.
Yeah. At least she hasn't barked yet.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, hot take for me is I like this pro clubs idea.
We need to get a team going.
The wheels are turning already, but no, it's great talking to you guys. Great seeing you guys. And you know, hopefully this isn't a prolonged goodbye. Maybe we redo this here in a couple weeks again, but yeah, seriously, hearts out to everybody out in Columbus and in the great state of Ohio. I hope everybody stays safe and takes care of yourself.
Hey, real quick, Ralph.
Yeah.
Was this the best episode of the Ralph Schudell Show you've ever done?
Yeah, I mean, you guys are pretty great, but Gracie looking at you with the puppy dog eyes though, man. That's got me right there. That's the magic right there.
I think she wants to go outside.
Probably. It's done storming, so she's probably ready to go.
It was a great Inception-like episode of the Ralph Schudell podcast with a massive report podcast mixed in.
Is it all a dream right now? Do we get to wake up yet?
I need to let me grab my dreidel and we'll figure it out.
Well, and it has me saying something that I never thought I would say, but you know, that answer from everybody here when I asked if you'd go to games, just around the horn, it was no. You need to be safe. You need to mask up. And I'd never thought I would say this, but people be like the people on the Massive Report podcast. They are shining examples for all of you, and you should all strive to be more and more like them. So Ralph, Pat, Ori's, oh, he's here masking up too. Alex is masked up. It's Bart here. Brian Phillips with us in spirit. We'll be back when we return, because we are going to come back. I don't know how, but it might be 2021. The Master Report podcast shall return. Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure. And on your behalf, bye-byes.